This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Thomas Ariti. Coming up this Wednesday, if we don't slow this thing down, people won't just be waiting in line for Centrelink, they'll be waiting for a machine to help them breathe. Is that a line from a movie about an impending apocalypse? No, it's Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews on the reality of the coronavirus as more restrictions come into place. But before we hear from the politicians and what they're doing, let's hear from people whose lives will be upended by the new restrictions on businesses and gatherings. Firstly, weddings and funerals. These important markers in our lives haven't been spared from the pandemic. The federal government has now put a strict limit on how many people can attend. Eleni Soltis begins our coverage.
Bride-to-be Luca Madden was supposed to get married in 10 days' time, but the government's decision to limit this joyous occasion to five people just wasn't an option.
We were very happy to get married with our immediate family, but given our parents wouldn't be able to attend, or that we would have to choose two of our, you know, four parents to come, that was just something we couldn't do, so we decided to postpone.
And what about wedding costs? What does this mean for you now?
It's been a bit of a runaround trying to cancel, especially honeymoon bookings overseas as well. Our caterers are doing it a bit tough. So for the most part, our vendors in Australia for the wedding have allowed us to keep everything that we paid in credit so that when we do eventually have our big party, probably next year, we'll be able to effectively cash that in.
And it's not just betrothed couples feeling the pain. The entire industry has come to a shuddering halt. Come over
here, shove them tight. Hi, my name's Emma Myler and I'm a singer, entertainer, and I sing at lots and lots of weddings.
But not anymore for now.
Oh man, it means no work for a long time.
And this is more broadly.
Yes. Yeah, look, weddings are just a small part of what we do. So absolutely, there's no weddings, but there's no public gigs in pubs, clubs. There's definitely no corporate events. Yeah, it's pretty devastating.
Jason Aravanis is a senior industry analyst with IBIS World. He says the impact on the wedding industry will be significant.
So last year, the wedding industry was worth $2.2 billion. That includes bridal stores, professional photography, event catering, venue hire, and limousines.
Funerals have also not been spared from the new stringent measures.
Well, it's going to change the way we do funerals. I feel sad for the families, but because of the current restrictions, health restrictions, we've got to go down this path. So that's, you know, my main concern is just for the families and people that, you know, want to attend the funerals.
Darren Lee is a third-generation funeral director at Trevor Lee and Son. Already he has had to tell grieving families today about limiting the congregation to 10 people.
One family have said that they're not going to go to the church now. They're just going to go straight to the crematorium, have a service there. And the other family, she was really lovely. And she gave me a list of 35 people that she wanted in the church before these restrictions came out. And we've had a bit of a laugh this morning over how much she's got to cull and how many people she's going to upset. And she was quite funny. And she said, all this work I've put into this list, now I've got to go the other way.
Funeral director Darren Lee, Eleni Soltis reporting. The real estate industry has also caught up in the physical distancing measures. Open houses, they're now banned. Gone are the days of public auctions out the front of a house or apartment. Isabel Rowe has been taking a look at how the industry's trying to adapt.
Hi, is it Christian?
Yes.
Hi, I'll just log you off. Thanks for registering today.
That's okay.
At this empty apartment in Sydney's eastern suburbs, prospective tenants have slowed to a trickle.
So it's all recently been renovated, brand new kitchen.
McGrath Nickel agent Giselle Nash Smith is still taking a few people through her listed properties, but only one or two at a time.
Well, we definitely make sure that everybody has registered and then they obviously have to sign a disclosure to say that they haven't been overseas or in contact with the virus that they are aware of. We're obviously very clean with our hand sanitizer in and out process as well. And we're just sort of telling people that they're not allowed to touch anything, turn on the light switches, etc.
She's already seeing an impact on the real estate market in Sydney as people follow instructions to stop unnecessary contact with others.
I've seen less people come to our open inspections with our tenanted properties tenants are not willing to let us into the property. So we're only showing our vacant properties now and by appointment only.
The Prime Minister announced those restrictions last night that are, so no auctions and no open houses. Mm-hmm. How do you think you're going to deal with that?
Well, we just have to adjust. We've been doing private appointments for a while now, and I do think that's probably the way forward. And we're just already set up with Zoom for auctions as well. We haven't yet tested it, but it should be going on Saturday with a couple of auctions. We do have one on Thursday night, so that should be interesting.
Some digital real estate agencies are already running their inspections, valuations and auctions online. Melbourne-based agent Jake Johnson.
The main product that we use is Zoom. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but that's kind of what we use for our virtual appraisals, virtual private inspections and all that kind of stuff as well.
So Zoom is, I think, what a lot of people around the country are using at the moment to do their meetings. So how do you make real estate work like that?
So we've got Zoom set up on our mobiles and the laptops. Just as an example, yesterday we had a appraisal request for a gentleman that obviously was a bit concerned about the COVID-19 and all that. Just to set him up, it's actually quite easy. We set it up on our end, organise a meeting, we send it through to the client. It's virtually the exact same as we'd be sitting there with them, but you know, he's in front of his laptop, I'm in front of mine.
He thinks it's a matter of time before the more traditional agencies follow suit. The industry's peak body, the Real Estate Institute of Australia, thinks it's still too early to know the effect of the coronavirus pandemic on the market. But President Adrian Kelly is hopeful.
Everyone needs somewhere to live, whether you're renting or whether you're an owner-occupier. What I feel will happen is that with lowering of consumer sentiment, we're likely to see a reduction in the volume of sales, but I wouldn't expect that we'll see massive reductions in values.
And he is calling on the federal government to swiftly announce policies to protect tenants and their landlords when people who've lost their jobs begin to struggle to pay rent.
What we've been saying to the government is they're going to have to provide some sort of rental assistance in some form so that every dollar of that rent flows right through the system and gives $5 or $6 in terms of bang for buck. But it's a serious issue and it's one which is happening right now and it's going to be a massive problem for our industry and how we manage this.
Just this morning, I've had reports from colleagues that people have had emails from their agent saying you need to pay rent and that we will evict you if you don't. Is that potentially a tone-deaf sort of email to be sending at this point?
Look, what I will say is that there's information coming out on this today and those instructions to us and all of our members will be very clear.
President of the Real Estate Institute of Australia, Adrian Kelly, Isabel Rowe reporting. The biggest fear for almost everyone is whether they'll still be in a job at the end of this. Now, Westpac's forecasting the official unemployment rate will spike to 11%. And that dire prediction comes as Virgin Australia reveals plans to stand down 80% of its workforce. Our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan, is following the developments. Peter, we'll come to Virgin shortly, but first, that's a pretty grim prediction on unemployment from Westpac. What could that mean?
Well, good afternoon, Tom. Westpac economists say the COVID-19 shock to the Australian economy will trigger a deep recession and a sharp spike in the unemployment rate. That means the jobless rate jumping to 11% by mid-2020. That's more than double the current 5.1%. The queues outside Centrelink offices around the country illustrate this shock as companies stand down more staff. The reality is quite sober that in any recession, let alone a deep one, some jobs never come back. And Westpac is warning the unfolding recession is shaping up to be more severe than the global financial crisis more than a decade ago.
Yeah, and let's take a look at Virgin Australia. It's standing down most of its workforce. Is this now, you know, a matter of survival for the airline?
Well, Tom, Virgin's business of flying is now pretty much stalled, so it's acted to temporarily stand down 80% of its staff. That's 8,000 workers from the 10,000 workforce until at least the end of May. Now, they'll be able to access leave entitlements, including long service leave and holiday leave, but Chief Executive Paul Scurrah says that for many, leave without pay will be inevitable. And Mr. Scurrah is trying to find short-term and long-term deployment or other jobs, but it's sadly inevitable that most will be joining the growing list of job seekers.
And that's the human cost, but you know, we're hearing that Virgin's main business is pretty much grounded given the travel restrictions.
That's right. Virgin's cutting domestic flight capacity by 90%, so down to 10%. Dramatic steps, according to Paul Scurrah. But he's now working with the federal government to maintain essential services. That includes critical freight and logistics operations. So Virgin's grounded 125 planes, with most domestic flights suspended from the 27th of March until the 14th of June. The cut-price airline Tiger Air Australia is being suspended, effective immediately. He's also working on a proposal to close Virgin's New Zealand cabin crew and pilot base and the Tiger pilot base in Melbourne.
Peter Ryan reporting there. So let's look at the situation overseas now. And the US President Donald Trump has doubled down on a suggestion that his country's coronavirus crisis could be over by Easter. But in New York and other cities, authorities are crying out for help. Barbara Miller has the latest.
Been a very busy day.
Donald Trump has described the fight to contain coronavirus as a war, but he thinks the fight is almost over.
Ultimately, the goal is to ease the guidelines and open things up to very large sections of our country as we near the end of our historic battle with the invisible enemy. There's tremendous hope as we look forward and we begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
And President Trump is sounding confident that peace can be restored by Easter.
I think that would be a great thing for our country, and we're all working very hard to make that a reality. Easter is a very special day for many reasons, and what a great timeline this would be.
Donald Trump says supplies of surgical masks, gowns, gloves and respirators are already on their way to the areas of greatest need, or will be soon. And as for the financial impact, well, it's being taken care of too.
I'm pleased to report that we are working to pass the biggest and boldest financial relief package in American history. Senators will soon, hopefully, vote on a $2 trillion bill that will deliver direct cash payments to struggling Americans. We're working on job retention loans for small businesses and extended unemployment insurance for laid-off workers.
I've had several conversations this week with President Trump, and I respect his office for sure, and I'm trying to work with him. But I have to respectfully disagree with him when he says that he's not looking at months for this crisis.
That's the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio. More than 200 people have died there of COVID-19, and there are more than 25,000 people infected.
We need more federal help, and we need it quickly. We are doing all we can just to get through March right now. April will unquestionably be worse than March. And right now, my fear is that May could be worse than April.
Los Angeles is mourning its first coronavirus victim under the age of 18, one of around a dozen casualties so far in the county. The mayor of L.A., Eric Garcetti, is also doubtful about the president's timeline.
I think it's way too easy and too soon for us to be talking about when this is going to be done. We're about 6 days behind New York City statistically in terms of the number of cases. While we put in action some of the measures a little bit earlier, it's not a matter of if in any place. It's a matter of when.
At that rate, it could be Thanksgiving, not Easter, before there really is light at the end of the tunnel.
Barbara Miller. On ABC Radio, across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks very much for your company. As the virus spreads, Australians are bracing for an even tougher round of restrictions. In fact, the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, says a further stage three of shutdown measures is just around the corner. Political reporter Alexandra Beach has more.
Daniel Andrews says Victoria and Australia need to buy some time.
If you can stay home, you must stay home. No dinner party, no shopping trip is worth a life.
To that end, he says National Cabinet's latest restrictions will help slow the spread of this virus. The new rules put strict limits on the number of people at weddings and funerals, and will see the closure of more businesses, including beauty salons and swimming pools. But the Victorian Premier says an even bigger shutdown is imminent.
I want to tell all Victorians today there will be a stage three. Now, that's not to be announced today. That's not yet determined. But it is coming. There will be a stage three.
He wouldn't outline exactly what that might look like or when Stage 3 would be announced, although he says those restrictions might be implemented in different states at different times, depending on the number of local coronavirus cases. These matters will be discussed at another meeting of National Cabinet tonight.
We've got queues at Centrelink offices. That's heartbreaking. What we don't want is queues for people who need a machine to help them breathe. We cannot have people queuing for intensive care beds. That will mean they will die.
Queues have been forming outside Centrelink offices as Australia faces the prospect of at least 1.7 million people being unemployed. 700,000 people are already on the JobSeeker payment, and the government is predicting 1 million will go on it because of this pandemic. The Centrelink website has struggled to cope with demand and crashed this week, while people have spent hours waiting on the Centrelink phone line. Services Australia General Manager Hank Yongen says existing Centrelink clients have been clogging the system by trying to find out about the first stimulus payment, which really isn't necessary.
It's important for current customers to understand this process is automatic. You don't need to contact us. It's automatic.
He says there is no need to queue up or call Centrelink. Instead, people should make the most of a new way of registering your intent to make a claim online, which should help clear the queues.
Most of the people we're dealing with may not have dealt with us before, but they generally will have a MyGov account. As long as you are connected to either the ATO or Medicare, any one of those member services, you don't have to be connected to Centrelink. You simply log into MyGov and you will see a prominent button and you can then register your intent to claim.
Hank Yongen is the boss of Services Australia. That report from Alexandra Beach. Now, we do have some news coming out of Canberra. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has now announced that after midnight, all elective surgeries, other than those most urgent, will be cancelled. On top of that, he's also announced the formation of a National COVID-19 Coordination Commission. It'll be headed by former Fortescue Metals executive Neville Power.
That commission's job, put simply, is to solve problems. Problems that require the private sector working together with the private sector. CEOs to talk to CEOs and to be engaged with by CEOs to ensure that the private-to-private effort is there solving problems in the national interest and it's being mobilised. It's about the private sector working together with the public sector. It's about better coordinating the efforts that are happening within the public sector.
Well, as Alex told us a moment ago, we keep hearing about new lockdown measures. It's likely there'll be more to come. And more than 20 specialists from the Group of Eight research universities advised the National Cabinet on the measures announced last night. Not all of them are virologists, epidemiologists or immunologists. In fact, mathematics is also playing a role in modelling and planning as the virus spreads. Dr. Nick Geard is a computational modeller from Melbourne University. He's been providing updates to the government and we spoke earlier.
Look, it's all a matter of degree. The more we can reduce the opportunities that this virus has to spread, the more we can slow down the rate it spreads and the more that gives us time to plan for additional approaches like contact tracing and identifying where cases are and who their contacts are. It's all about trying to stay sort of one step ahead of the virus. So anything we can do to slow down that spread is very helpful. And I think the measures that the government put in place are one approach to that, but it's also really down to the individual decisions that we all make about our behaviour at the moment. It really is something that requires a collective effort on the part of the whole population.
Yeah, and basically, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment, but based on your modelling, do you have an idea of what Australia could expect in the coming weeks or days?
There is a lot of uncertainty around it. One of the difficulties is that this is quite a slow moving virus. So from the point in time at which somebody becomes exposed and becomes infected, it can often be a matter of days before that person develops symptoms and becomes sick. If they do, we know that some people won't actually go on to develop symptoms. They might have a very mild illness. So what we see in terms of the case reports is telling us about people who got infected, you know, a week or a couple of weeks ago. So what that means is that any changes that we make to the way that we're behaving today, they won't necessarily become apparent in the case numbers for another week or two. So it really is important that we sort of act now to prevent those sort of worst case scenarios coming to pass.
We're hearing a lot about Italy at the moment, harrowing numbers coming from there in terms of the number of cases and the extraordinary number of fatalities. How does Australia compare to a country that's really become the focal point of the crisis?
Look, Australia has a number of advantages over Italy. I think one is that we responded much more rapidly in terms of imposing travel restrictions. Two is we have a much higher level of testing compared to Italy. So although the number of cases that we're observing in Australia is increasing, this is actually a sign that we're doing a good job with testing. We're actually finding the cases that are out there. It's a much more worrying situation if we weren't finding those cases. And I think that's where Italy was for quite a long time. So hopefully we have the opportunity to intervene to try and slow the spread of disease at an earlier stage compared to when Italy was able to take those decisive steps. And I guess the final thing is that being sort of an island, Australia has a greater opportunity to actually have been able to detect the cases as they were coming into Australia. So we know that the movements across borders in Europe have greatly facilitated the sort of the undetected spread of the virus there.
Dr. Nick Geard, a computational modeller and senior lecturer at Melbourne University. Let's take a look now at a worst-case scenario plan to have one nurse look after several coronavirus cases in intensive care. It sparked warnings that the approach could compromise survival. Australia currently has a standard 1-to-1 nurse-to-patient ratio in critical care units, as Annie Guest reports.
Critical care units provide constant and labour-intensive treatment for patients who would otherwise die. They're cared for by people like Alison Hovac, who's also the president of the Australian College of Critical Care Nurses.
Because they're there, because they're very unstable, they generally require a one-on-one nursing ratio. So one-on-one nursing ratio means you've got one nurse to one patient.
But Dr. Anthony Holley from the Australia-New Zealand Intensive Care Society recently told PM,
"We're looking very hard at how we could change the way we work, potentially using one critical care nurse with one ward nurse to provide care across a number of patients, as opposed to the one-to-one ratio that we traditionally require in intensive care."
Here's some of that traditional practice, as described in a Health Report documentary in 2013. The intensive care unit is well equipped to offer artificial support. Patients can be attached to a breathing machine via a tube inserted through their mouth or nose and into their lungs.
Pop your hand there, mate. You're all right. I know. Tube's no fun.
Patients strain and cough as nurses suction sputum from their ailing lungs.
This is going to feel a bit gross as we go down the back of your throat there. That's it. Good man. Big cough. Big cough. That's it.
Tubes inserted into blood vessels can deliver a cocktail of drugs to help the lungs, heart and other organs to do their jobs. Then there could be dialysis for failing kidneys. There's also heart-lung bypass machines. And Alison Hovac says abandoning the one-to-one patient-nurse ratio would risk lives.
When you have a critically ill patient within the intensive care unit, they are incredibly sick. They usually have a lot of monitoring. They need a lot of observations, a lot of supports. And if we reach a certain point of, you know, taking on several patients, we will be putting their care at risk.
So it would likely lead to worse outcomes.
It could potentially, because our nurses can't dedicate the kind of care and the close observations that is required on these critically ill patients.
Plans are underway to increase Australia's ICU capacity from 2 to more than 5,000 beds. Dr. Anthony Holley from the Australia-New Zealand Intensive Care Society explains how this might be done.
Through use of other areas within the hospital, with opening previously decommissioned beds, potentially using operating theatre areas.
So just to clarify, instead of one-to-one care by an intensive care nurse to a patient, that there may be one intensive care nurse with one ward nurse who's not necessarily an intensive care nurse looking after a number of patients. Is that what you're saying?
This is one possible strategy.
Dr. Anthony Holley from the Australian New Zealand Intensive Care Society. That report from Annie Guest, and that's all from us today. Please remember just to wash your hands, keep your distance from people. If you can, please stay at home. I'm Thomas Arete. Thanks very much for your company.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stockwell.
And I'm Angela Boispierre, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal. It's not necessarily easy getting tested for coronavirus. You have to tick quite a few boxes before it happens, because there isn't an infinite number of kits. And as the caseload grows, that need's only going to get more acute, unless we find a cheaper and simpler way. Now, some Sydney biohackers claim they've done exactly that.
Today, how this test, that doesn't even need to be done in a lab, could have the potential to change the fight against COVID-19. Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.